Hello, and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness with your hosts, Mike and Ant-Man.
Hi, everyone.
This episode, we are calling The Good, The Bad, and The Brexit, and where we discuss what leaving the EU means for us. Now, I have to admit that neither me and Anthony actually followed the campaign that much, did we?
No, not at all.
No. And that's because, really, just like the maxim of the magician, the closer you look, the less you actually see.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, Mike, I saw the early stages and I thought, here we go, the same old, you know, platitudes, the same old political lines by both the Remain camp and the Leave. And I just thought, I'm not interested, because this is just the, you know, the bad side of politics. The reason why I, you know, lost interest in politics many years ago when Blair first came to power. So I just didn't, it just didn't engage me at all. And also because I thought that, well, they'll just fix the vote in favour of remaining in the EU, I just thought this was all a bit of a shenanigans, you know, let's play the democracy card so afterwards they can go, look, here you go, democracy in action. Aren't you proud to be British? You have this vote. So when on Friday I got to work and people were talking about it, there was one of my colleagues in the office where I work, a young lass, was saying, oh, My housemates, they're going to have to leave now because they're European. And she was almost in tears. And I thought, what? Does that mean that, you know, the Brexit campaign, they've won, we're leaving the EU? I was absolutely shocked and quietly delighted, I have to say. Because up until that point, like you, Mike, I just wasn't interested. For me, it was a shoo-in. It's definitely going to be a Remain. And then all of a sudden, I'm interested.
I have to admit, I know what you mean, yeah. I've been disillusioned by politics for a good couple of years now because there's so much spin and BS being spread around. You never actually know really what's going on, do you? And even when there is a glimmer of hope, it gets trodden on so much that it soon turns dark. I mean, just took a look at the fact that Jeremy Corbyn, as soon as he got into power, all the press could say is how much he spent on this suit or what tie was he wearing or not wearing. You know, they focus on this, the list of details, the unimportant stuff, when the real important stuff just goes by the wayside.
Anything of substance, it's all about the projection of an image and whether a politician is sticking to what, you know, a politician is seen to be. And of course, because Jeremy Corbyn isn't, you know, with his rough old suits, and the media just lays into him.
Yeah, I mean, so the truth is, up until a couple of days before the election, I hadn't even decided if I wanted to vote or not. I wasn't even sure. Was it even worth it? Like you said, they would just most probably fix it anyway. But what really took me by surprise is the that storm we had on Thursday morning.
Here in the south.
Yeah. And it wasn't until I woke up in the morning, getting ready for work, and I just see on the news slightly that a picture image of where the storm was located. And it just so happened to be right over the channel, covering just into England and to France.
Yeah.
And I suddenly thought to myself, if I was watching a movie right now, that would be a blatant hint, a blatant foreshadowing of what was to come. So that morning, I almost had it into my head, but it looks like we're leaving then.
Like a premonition almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which almost inspired me to vote.
Yeah, as I say, Mike, from my perspective, it was a complete shock, a very joyous shock, because throughout the 80s and 90s, up until Blair came into power, I was very much a sort of hardened socialist left-winger, shame to admit. You know, I wasn't so aware maybe back then, and I was always on the losing side. I remember in 1992... when John Major won the election and Neil Kinnock lost, when he made that speech outside the headquarters of the Labour Party admitting defeat, I actually cried. I mean, I was a lot younger and not so wise in those years, but, you know...
So you can understand the emotional effect of everyone who wanted to stay in right now.
Yeah, yeah, I can understand that emotional pull, and it is very... polarizing throughout the whole campaign. This issue of being in the EU or not is obviously very, very polarizing.
Yeah. Now, one thing I will say is moving on to, say, the campaigns and how they were, how they were run, and the sort of propaganda, the BS and the spin that took place, it almost got to the point where you couldn't actually tell if it was a good thing or a bad thing.
No.
Even to the campaign points they were bringing
for up. For me, the bits that I did see, and as you said, Mike, both of us hardly covered it, you know, hardly looked at any of the mainstream coverage anyway, it was actually worse than a general election campaign, because all the people, you know, Boris Johnson, Gove, David Cameron, all these characters, just horrible characters anyway, irrespective of whether they were campaigning for in or for leaving. And the platitudes on immigration, trade, issues like that were just so, the debate was just, it was even worse, like I say, than a general election. It was just so ridiculous, so unnuanced,
was it,
and
was
simplistic.
Was it proper schoolboy politics, which
is
mudslinging all
it
the
was,
time?
Yeah, basically, that's what it was. Yeah.
No, I have to admit, the thing that scared me most about the Leave campaign was that it was run by Boris Johnson.
I know.
So you had a Conservative leaving the Stay In campaign, and you had a Conservative leaving the Get Out campaign.
Well, Cameron was... Yeah, of course. Cameron was for remaining and Boris Johnson was for leaving,
So you had Conservatives running both sides of the spectrum here, and it's just like, hang on, what's going
on?
Yeah,
that's just added to the absurdity, which just switched me off from watching any of the coverage. But as we were saying, you had the same old, you know, memes around immigration. You know, those who were in the Leave camp when they were talking about immigration, which I agree is a serious issue, then, you know, immediately those in the Remain camp would say, well, you're being racist. Well, no. So, you know, that isn't the point. There could never be a proper discussion on that issue, because as soon as someone from the Leave camp was saying, look, we need to discuss immigration, the Remain camp would say, that's racist, we can't discuss that. And no, of course we need to discuss it. It's an important issue.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, immigration was, I reckon, one of the biggest reasons why the country did vote to leave.
Yeah, I would say the majority of working class people in this country who live in urban areas where there is masses of immigration, certainly since the East European bloc countries joined around about 10 years ago, they turned around and stuck two fingers up to the political establishment to say, enough is enough, you're taking the piss. And, you know, what I've found is since the vote, the result has been, we've known about the result, you've heard a lot of the, you know, liberal, so-called progressives coming out saying, oh, it's shocking, you know, I'm so upset, you know, this is an outrage for democracy. What they're actually really saying is the working class don't have the right to vote on, you know, something which is very real to them. And also a lot of these progressive middle class types, they don't live with the consequences of mass immigration.
True.
Or multiculturalism.
Yeah, yeah.
Or diversity.
It's absurdities on both sides.
Yeah.
And that's why we want to discuss the good and the bad of both sides of the arguments. Because that it's just crazy what was actually said. So take immigration, for example. Yes, we do have a population crisis in this country.
We do.
It's not necessarily immigration, it's just population.
I mean, we have a very densely populated country, and we're all concentrated into the urban areas, aren't we?
Now immigration in this country is particularly high, and that is because we have such a good system in this country for taking care of its people. The problem is that we're being stretched to absurdity with the immigration numbers
and
that we do have.
And that's having quite bad effect on local services, social services, the NHS and things like that.
So I do totally understand the sensible vote for saying, well, actually, we should discuss this properly. But on the other side, calling it xenophobic just because you actually want to discuss this topic is a bit much. But at the same time, with the likes of Nigel Farage stirring up the xenophobic vote of actually saying, no, we've got to stop these people coming into this country, which is going a bit far, I would say.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there were some images that were used which were a little bit controversial, shall we say.
But, I mean, that's what we really wanted to discuss on the immigration, because, you know, it is a big issue. It's something that needs to be discussed, but it's one of those emotional subjects that
very emotive, isn't it?
as soon as you start talking about it, people will use their assumptions on you and say, well, you're being xenophobic, you're being racist.
Or you're being intolerant. It's like, no, let's just have a proper debate. And that's actually how the mainstream closed down any prospect of having a proper debate. So you never really get to the core of an issue. And that's the problem with politics.
Yeah. Well, just like you were saying earlier, like the people who were upset because we left.
Yeah.
Are now saying that kind of like the poor shouldn't have had the right to vote,
exactly,
because
essentially, yeah, because what they're saying is, you know, these unsophisticated working class people who voted to leave. Well, you know, if they were more sophisticated about and cultured and have travelled in Europe and knew, you know, about diversity and multiculturalism, well, you know, they would have voted to remain. And that really does rub me up the wrong way. So it's polarising me.
Yeah. Well, the fact is, the way I almost see it is, anyone who actually follows the mainstream media and uses their opinions on that, I almost wouldn't give them the right to vote.
No. And we've had that a lot. A few people I've spoken to, they've just repeated the, you know, mainstream narrative, which is, oh, you know, it's a real shame and, you know, it's an affront to democracy and, oh, we need a second referendum. It's like, have you actually thought about this for yourself? And a lot of people haven't. And I know about you, Mike, I've actually kept counsel. I've not admitted to a lot of people, even my family, actually, that I've voted to leave, because they'll by context, or they will say, well, you know, thinking I'm racist or intolerant. So
yeah, it is crazy. You get that backlash, don't you?
Yeah. So what else we got in terms of the campaign was this idea of the cost of membership. So those, you know, Farage and good old Boris were campaigning heavily on the idea that we pay so many millions per week or month, I don't know what the details are, into the EU. And if we leave, then more of this money could go into, you know, things like the NHS.
Yes. Now, we do pay a lot of money. Like you say, I don't know the exact details, but hundreds of millions.
Yeah.
Just to be a member of the EU.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily get an automatic benefit from that.
No.
It's only if the trade laws that they're making at the time actually work out in our favour,
yeah,
if they
exactly
do or not.
Yeah.
Not so much in the fishing case.
No, exactly.
But, yeah, so we do get some nice perks for being a part of this EU.
Yeah.
So we pay this money, and the major perk is the trade deals that we might get.
Yeah, or you get funding for deprived areas within the UK. But my argument has always been, well, that should come from central government.
Yes, it's one of those weird things that I've never really understood, but the bureaucracy of politics is something that no one truly understands.
No, exactly.
Even the people who live that system.
Yeah, exactly. And the other issue, of course, which I don't know about you, Mike, but from my perspective, is one of the key reasons why I voted to leave, was this idea of sovereignty and this the expansion of this fascistic European Union and, you know, more and more powers being taken away on a local level within the UK meant that I just felt that I had no choice but to vote to leave.
Well, yeah, that is the biggest one for me too, because we are, in a sense, a democratic society. Now,
even if we know the limitations of that.
That means a different thing to a different person, but at least we've got some level of democracy going on.
There's some level of accountability.
Yeah, but when it comes to the European Union, it's actually structured in a way to give no power to its member states.
No, absolutely.
I mean, we may vote in a member of European Parliament.
Sure, but they have no power at all.
Yeah, they're just figureheads at the end of the day.
And many of them sort of are quite anti-European themselves, which is really ironic.
Yeah. So, it's this weird thing where it's actually seen from the opposite camp as a shame that it's stepped backwards for leaving, because joining unions is actually a good thing.
Well, they see it as a form of progression, but, you know, I don't think many of them have done research at the kind of level that David Icke has done and what we've looked at, which is, again, the presentation of the European Union is this thing, it's all about progression and inclusivity, and that's what we needed, you know, after the Second World War when it started with the EEC and it's expanded. But we know there's a sinister element behind all of that.
Yeah, it's the way it's structured, it's the dictatorial element of it.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that we have no true power in it.
No.
So as a democratic country, we're giving our power away, our sovereignty away to a non-democratic structured society.
Absolutely, yeah.
How can we live with ourselves with that?
Yeah, and also in terms of sovereignty, what you can see is that on a day-to-day level, like you were saying, Mike, if we follow this European model more, we all have less say over our own affairs on a local level.
Yeah, but on the other side of the spectrum, if we had remained to stay in, we would still be privy to certain European Union laws when it comes to work and pay and stuff like that. So there are actually some good laws within the European Union. Laws that actually benefited us.
And we're going to discuss that a bit further when we consider the fallout, aren't we?
But the fact is, by leaving, we've left ourselves open in a bit of a way.
Yeah.
And this is where everyone on the Remain campaign was saying, well, we're stronger in the EU.
And it's almost like a lot of the campaign was based on, well, what are you going to replace it with? And I can understand some of that mentality, but I think this is the era of change, as we discuss, you know, on Discerning Consciousness. Now we're coming to this era, and I think, you know, on the one hand, we can say, well, maybe these events were contrived, even the vote to leave, which I have to say, I don't agree. I actually think this is a real spanner in the works for the powers that be. I think that you've seen in the coverage, I saw Newsnight on the Friday, and it was almost like a wake. It was almost pitched at a level of, oh my God, this thing has happened. We don't know how to react. The journalists, the politicians, it is a bit like everything's been thrown up in the air. And I think that's really good for the development of, you know, humanity and hopefully expanding consciousness.
Well, I hope so. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
Now, in terms of the campaign, Mike, we're going to end here. Of course, we have to talk, I'm afraid, about the whole Joe Cox incident.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I think the whole thing was rather fishy. I suspect it was a psyop. Now, whether she died or not, we don't know. But the way in which they deified someone that was barely known in the UK, let alone abroad, when, you know, you had all these, you know, people in Syria were saying, oh, she helped us. And in Europe, there was, you know, people gathering by torchlight. And it just smelt really fishy. Because also at the time, I believe the polls were pointing to the Leave getting quite a big lead, 8-9 point lead. So I think they thought, shit, we're losing it here. We've got to grab something back. And as you and I know, Mike, what happens when people, because on one level, this event is like emotional trauma. It's what happens to the psyche of people. They tend to be drawn to familiarity, you know, as with 9/11. The whole point of it was to drag people back into the things that they know and the things that they can trust, i.e. remaining.
Yeah. Now, I do agree with you that this Joe Cox death was very odd.
I have to admit, I haven't done any research. I know that her and her husband were part of a very dodgy organisation, but I haven't done any other research. I will in time, but not at the moment.
Okay. Well, the only thing I actually know about this Joe Cox death is that there was an incident.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I've been paying so little attention on the whole to all this that I didn't actually find out that someone had died until...
I told you.
No, until they were actually doing the mourning ceremonies in the Houses of Parliament, and people on both sides were actually giving their speeches about her. Yeah. And then I was like, what's this?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
And then to find out that... someone had actually died on the campaign trail, just brought to me dodgy tactics.
Yeah. And it's like the timing, and again, the same old story. The patsy, or the alleged killer, was this peaceable character who friends had said, well, he'd never acted in any violent way. And again, it's like, oh, here we go again.
So, you know, it smells of dodgy fish, like you say. There's something going on there. Yeah. So to try and get everyone into a very emotional state.
Yes,
and that's what I think the whole aim of
and
the
that
whole
polarity.
Yeah. I mean, the whole campaign was not about logical arguments.
No.
It was about emotional states.
Yeah, definitely.
Because if you can get you on the emotional state, then they've got you.
Yeah.
Hook, line and sinker.
So if we bring things up to date now, what we're going to talk about is the fallout. So obviously the vote came in early hours of Friday morning. and we're now the beginning of the following week, and the main fallout at the moment is in terms of the Labour Party and a pressure being applied on Jeremy Corbyn to resign. I believe about half of the cabinet over the weekend resigned, and like vultures, they're seeing this as an opportunity to ditch very much an old Labour figure and try and, you know, institute much more of a new Labour public friendly figure. And actually, I think it's disgusting. And this again shows the real disgusting element, self-serving element of politics, and why people are so disillusioned with politics.
Well, I have to admit, Corbyn has been a bit of an unfortunate scapegoat on this.
Yeah, he has.
I mean, the truth is, we're all happy to know that David Cameron was going to resign.
Yes.
Because
we are ecstatic.
Lost. Yeah. Woohoo! Good news. I'm more happy than that than leaving the EU.
Exactly, yeah.
But what's happened now is, due to a very smart-thinking political spin, they've got everyone now looking at the Labour Party, not the Conservatives.
Yeah.
So it's all a misdirection going on at the moment.
And I feel Corbyn was in a difficult position, because I know if he had gone in the Leave camp, his party probably would have crucified him and the mainstream media. But funnily enough, if he'd been brave enough to do that, can you imagine where he'd be now?
Yeah.
He would be in a very, very powerful position, potentially the next PM.
But the fact is, the media undermine him at every level, so no matter what he does, he can't win.
And you could see a few times when I did catch some of the campaign, Mike, you saw him, and he was wheeled out, and you could see he wasn't happy, because being a left-winger, he's very much always been for leaving the EU.
Yeah.
So he probably adopted it out of political expediency, knowing that he's not going to come across very well because his heart wasn't in it.
Yeah.
So I do feel sorry for him in that regard. The other thing, of course, as you mentioned earlier, we have to say that name again, unfortunately, Cameron. He is rather despicably saying he's resigning, which we're all in favour of, but he's not going to go to October. How does that work, Mike?
Well, there's a lot of pettiness coming out of David at the moment, and that's because he, out of spite, he doesn't want to deal with any
but he'll stay till October.
But that is a delaying tactic.
Of course it is.
Because if he's staying till October, they can't get anyone else in until after that
period.
And
so he can say, well, I can't negotiate with the EU, so we can't even begin this issue of Article 50 and the Lisbon Treaty, which has to be invoked in order for this two-year process to begin. And in this summer period, we might have a terrorist attack, might happen. And then, you know, those that want a second referendum will say, well, look, we've had this vote. There's all this turmoil in the country. There's all these racial divisions now. We simply have to have a second referendum, you know.
Well,
that's how I see things might go.
Call me cynical. There's a lot that could go, but we'll talk about that in the next section. So with the EU response.
Yeah.
Now, this has been the most interesting.
It has, yeah.
So what's just happened is we've had a referendum.
Yeah.
So that's the country all coming together and going, do you know what? Out of these two options, we prefer this one.
In law, it means nothing.
Yeah. So now that has to be taken forward into the politicians and go, right, now they've decided to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's actually start
processing
this.
Yeah.
We've got to come up with new laws. We've got to write new things into action.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that have to happen after a vote's decided.
Yeah.
But it does seem like half of the EU is being really petty now and going, right, you voted to leave.
Yeah.
Out.
Yes.
Get out now.
Yeah.
No dilly-dallying. Yeah. We want you out.
Yeah, invoke Article 50. Don't wait until October. Although, in the last few days, Angela Merkel, another interesting character, has said, no, you know, we need to give Britain time. And I think as it plays out, Britain is such a big, powerful player within the EU. I don't think they're going to insist that, you know, we leave particularly quickly, I think. And they're all bureaucrats. They're all politicians. Let's not lose sight of that.
The longer that they can delay this, the better it is for them. At the moment, delaying tactics are all they have.
Yeah, sure.
So it's interesting to see that their response, at least.
What hasn't happened yet, which was said to happen, was in other EU countries, there will be calls for the people within those countries to have a referendum of their own.
I think now, one country's already called for this. Okay. I can't now, remember which one.
As someone that wants the whole fascistic EU bureaucracy broken up, that's what we need.
Yeah.
Because that is what the, you know, apparatchiks in the EU don't want, because then that would mean goodbye EU. They've got to come together now and make sure that they keep this thing. Because, well, I mean, Britain's a major, major player. And if you have referenda in other countries, then it's game over.
Well, this is the thing. The EU is nothing much more than a mob syndicate.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that.
And the fact is, the only member state that has actually left as of now, because we still haven't actually left,
no,
is Greece.
Yeah.
And they didn't leave. No. They got kicked out.
They got kicked out, yeah.
So it actually works out that no country is brave enough to leave until we broke exactly. that barrier.
And that's where you could see in the faces of these people that this isn't going to script. That's why I was happy.
Yeah. So the other countries now are going, oh, well, yeah. What? If Britain can do it. We can leave too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I have to admit, as the fallout goes, the most interesting one that I've seen is all to do with the division within the country.
Yeah, it's person very stark. To person. It's really stark.
Do you know what? Even though I wasn't around hundreds of years ago during the Civil War, I bet the tension between both sides was a bit like that.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. I've noticed, it's really weird, Mike, there's been a shift from me, because as I said, during the campaign, it's like, well, I'm not interested. And not since, I feel like, and since, I do feel like, well, I'm involved in this now.
I'm just going to sit up, pay attention, going on?
But yeah, I feel my emotions, and I'm getting angry at these, you know, young nippers at Glastonbury, and a few of them were at the House of Commons on the Green at the weekend, you know, campaigning for a second referendum, no doubt, because Daddy's job, cushy job at the EU was, you know, in threat. But, you know, I'm getting angry with these people. Look, can't you see the truth? The EU is a fascistic institution. You know, do you want a one world government? And you've got to realise, well, these are young kids. All they've ever known is the EU. They've been to uni where they've been taught about and extolled the virtues of the EU, diversity, multiculturalism. So they've had all that brainwashing, you know what I mean? And I'm coming from a much older perspective, and it's like they can't see anything other than that.
Well, come on, if you watch the news every day and believe that's the truth, well, yeah, what would you do?
Exactly, yeah.
Now, yeah, so this division of the country is very emotional, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Very emotional, because... Yeah.
And that's can be quite dangerous.
I've almost seen tears out of the people who wanted to stay
in. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And cries, as I said earlier, Mike... Democracy's been cheated. What? Because you didn't get the decision you wanted?
Yeah, because democracy was in action.
Yeah, and what I saw yesterday on the BBC News will make everyone laugh. There's some people going around now saying, oh, I didn't actually realise if I voted to leave that we would actually leave. They thought it was like a pseudo option. No! You see?
It's ridiculous. It's actually ridiculous. But the most ridiculous and telling bit of information with me is what they've said about this referendum.
Yeah.
So going into it, it was this is your one and only referendum.
Yeah, sure.
In or out, make your choice. We'll go with that.
Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah, you'll never have this choice again.
Yeah, yeah. It's a once in a lifetime.
And instantly, as soon as there's already talks of another referendum.
There was a campaign, wasn't there?
Yeah.
An online one for a second referendum. And then I did see the BBC News last night, and they came out and said, oh, there was people voting in other countries. There's all sorts of shenanigans. There's people voting from the Vatican City or something. All this nonsense going on.
Yeah.
So it completely discredited, the attempt to get a second referendum.
So there's a lot of nonsense.
And there will be, because of the emotional turmoil going on.
Yeah, in the news, in the media, almost to the point where you might as well turn it off and just get on with your life in that respect. Yeah,
exactly. Because and something else we need to consider in the fallout, Mike, is those who were in the Remain camp said, you know, on the Friday, if we leave, it will be all hell to pay loose. The financial markets will collapse, you know. There'd be instability across Europe. Has that happened? No. The FTSE's fell about 200 points. Wow. Less than 2%. You know, it's just a nonsense.
Yeah.
We did see the currency markets, but they were deliberately manipulated.
I was going to say, that almost comes with the future section in terms of what are people actually going to do, actively do, to punish us.
We'll talk to that in just
a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
One last point I want to say about this fallout, about the second vote, is just look at Ireland.
Yeah.
They gave them the referendum vote, and they decided, no, we don't want to be a part of the EU. Right. And they were like, okay then. And then 2 years later, they were like, how about it? Do you want to join the EU again?
Sure. And look at the austerity measures hit in Ireland. I mean, you know, the public sector pay has been cut between 30 and 40%. You know, that's the reality of EU membership.
They suck you dry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, far from prosperity. Yeah.
Yeah. So since I've covered that, I mean, it's a clear indicator that if that's what they've done over there because they really want because they really want you to be a member state.
Yeah.
Then what's that telling you about this time round?
Exactly.
If they're just going to pose the question again and again and again until they get their answer they want.
Yeah.
What's going on with politics?
That's why they're kicking it into the into the long grass, and that's why we, as the public, need to put pressure on the political class to say, no, Cameron, you're going now, and you need to invoke Article 50 now.
Yeah. Well, this brings us on to what's going to happen in the future.
Right, scary, isn't it?
Because, like we said, there is so many delaying tactics, there's so much panicking that is going on in the news media right now.
Mm.
It's almost worrying.
Yeah, I think one tactic that might be used by the government or whoever, powers that be, is this idea of punishing the UK. So I've already heard, well, of course, a lot of our food in the UK comes from abroad. Well, import costs, food will go up, inflation's going to go up. We're going to pay a price for leaving. Now, the UK government, as we were discussing earlier, Mike, they now... the reality is, once this is negotiated, if it does go through, within 2 to 3 years, they are going to have a lot more power. And as we know, that will be a Conservative government.
Yes.
That's very scary. So we might have austerity 2, right? Version 2.
Austerity in overdrive.
Austerity in overdrive because, well, this is... We've left the EU. This is what you get for leaving the EU. We can't do anything about it. It's world global economic conditions. And knowing the nasty Tories, whoever gets elected as the next leader, that worries me.
Yeah, so this is what we were coming back to again, about there's good and bads to both sides of the arguments.
Yes.
Because if we had stayed, we would, things would have carried on like normal, to the fact that in 5-10 years' time, we're not even a country anymore. We're just a part of Europe, and we've all
part
got
of a federation.
Almost. Yeah, we've got our hands chained to the system the whole time.
Yeah.
Whereas now, yes, we've got our freedom.
Yeah.
But that's an even scarier option
because they're in the hands of politicians.
Yeah.
And look at the political class, how corrupt they are.
Yeah, because like I was saying, we don't really have a proper democracy. We've got a feeble poor man's version of it, where generally speaking, we get one choice every 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. Although it's five now, and we've got fixed-term parliaments, so yeah.
Yeah, it's gone ridiculous.
Yeah.
So there is going to be a lot of turmoil that's coming up. But one thing you said about the all the prices going up.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't have to be a
natural thing. No, it doesn't necessarily have to happen. No.
That is what we were talking about, and actively being punished.
Sure, yeah.
So the people who didn't want us to leave are going, right, there's going to be a financial toll on this now.
Sure, yeah.
But, on the other side of the spectrum, now we're not in the EU, there's no more trade embargoes with countries that are outside the EU. Because before, if we wanted to trade with China, America, there were certain extra tolls because they were outside of the EU.
Yeah.
Now we don't have them anymore.
Yeah. And countries like Norway and Iceland aren't in the EU, and they seem to prosper. I mean, in Iceland, I know it's only got a population of about 300,000, so it's not a great example, but they even jailed some of the bankers.
Well, actually, I think that was the most fantastic decision ever made in terms of dealing with the banking scandal.
But we know that's not going to happen here because the centre of the global financial banking system is in London, not New York, as we know. So,
you know, as corrupt as it gets.
So our glory might be short-lived. But the other thing in terms of the future, Mike, is also in terms of immigration, how that might change. If we have greater control over our borders, how that can change. And also, what will our relationship with Europe be if we, you know, aren't involved in this economic and political union anymore?
So, naturally speaking, we could just say, well, why can't we deal sort out a nice trade deal with the European Union without being a member state
of it? Still sort of have a dip our toe in, if you like.
Well, not politically speaking.
No, economically. Economically, I suspect that's probably what will happen.
But the people who didn't want us to leave within the EU will go, well, no. You wanted to leave, so stay out.
You can't have your cake and eat it kind of thing.
Yeah, so And again, that shows the sort of pettiness that would happen within the political system.
And it will be interesting to see how it will play out, won't it? Very, very interesting.
Yeah, so like we say, there's a very big conspiratorial angle here where the powers that be really don't want us to leave. And that's why they're trying to do everything they can at the moment.
To get a second referendum.
To make sure it takes as long as possible.
Yeah.
Before we even start the leaving process.
Sure, yeah.
And like you say, get that second referendum going on.
I think that's the angle that they will push.
Yeah, so just seeing that almost tells you that, hang on, if they're putting that much effort into making that happen like that, then leaving sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. If they're trying to manipulate things to that degree. But just rounding things up here, Mike, I still think it's great because it's a shift, it's a change, it's something that wasn't expected. The political class were not, they were not accounting for it. We've seen it in the coverage in the media. They were preparing for a Remain vote. So, you know, we're in this era of change. So, you know, it might be difficult to know how it will play out. But for me, I'm really pleased and it gives me hope that, you know, things can change. But at the same time, as we were saying, you know, we got to watch these politicians. Really got to watch them now.
And that's because anything could happen.
Yeah.
Now, this is the scary part about leaving, is the fact of we are in new territory.
Yeah.
And being in new territory, we don't necessarily know what's going on.
Because we're leaving something, hopefully, if it plays out, that we were being a part of for 40 years.
Yeah. And just think what effects that's had on our country over those years.
And culturally.
Yeah. Now, I do have every faith that things are going to get much better.
Mm.
But that's not going to happen immediately.
No, no.
So if there was any idea I wanted to leave with everyone who's listening at the moment, that would actually be just hold down and weather the storm. I mean, there is going to be a political storm out of this. You can't deny that fact. Mm.
Yeah.
But
whether orchestrated or not, it's just inevitable.
Yeah. So as long as you can hold your own and actually weather the storm that's coming, you'll be on the brighter side of freedom that you've ever known.
And I'd definitely just like to add to that, Mike. Don't get drawn into the whole emotional polarity which the media and the politicians are going to try and create. You know, be discerning. That's the key.
Yeah.
Just be discerning.
Because if you've listened to our propaganda
and social conditioning episodes,
you'll know that everything they're doing in the news is for those aims.
Yeah. And before we leave, just like to add that Mike and I are on a new conspiracy show, aren't we? Really enjoying it.
Yeah, we've actually just been invited on to do some conspiracy talks with a radio station called UK Talk Radio.
Yeah, with the host Jeff, and it's been really interesting. I think we've done two now, haven't we?
Yep.
Aliens and the moon landings. We've got another one coming up soon. So if you want to listen to us on there, which is really interesting, it's UKTalkRadio.org, isn't it?
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Right, thanks everyone. Bye.
Bye.
So you've only got that bit at the end. Sorry, I couldn't think of the comment.
Ah, don't worry. I was in there.
Are you okay to do that bit at the end? If you take a picture of that...